Okay, well, good morning, everybody. I want to start with Jeremiah chapter 5. And I want to read just the first couple of verses. God says to Jeremiah, "Run back and forth through the streets of Jerusalem and see now and know, and seek in the broad places of it if you can find a man. If there are any who does justice who seeks truth, and I will pardon her." So God tells Jeremiah to go running around the streets and squares of Jerusalem looking for a man. Looking for people. And, of course, Jeremiah was representing God. This is God's search for man. And that's what I want to talk about. But when I say man, you know, I'm not politically correct. You know, persons, people. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. So, God is in search of man. Okay, and he is, as it were, running around the streets of the cities and the squares looking for people. And that is an old Yiddish proverb, poem, that in English is something like this: "And going out to meet him, I met him coming toward me," talking of God. There is this idea that, oh, we were in search of God. I was searching for the truth. I was searching for God. And, oh, yeah, then eventually I found it. That is not untrue as far as it goes. But far more than that, the essence is not that. God is in search of you and was in search of every one of us. And the Bible is not a riddle to be solved. As in, if you can get through this, oh, well, then God's waiting for you to have a relationship with you. God is far more proactive than that. And it is that which I want to just develop and go through. Well, within Jeremiah 30, God says of Israel, Jeremiah 30, verse 17, that this is Zion whom no man seeks after. 30 verse 17, that is, lamenting that no one's looking for Zion, but I am. And if you just scoot back to 14, this is Jeremiah 30, all your lovers have forgotten you, they don't seek you. No one's looking for Zion, no one's searching for Zion, but I am, God says. And putting those two verses together, you get the idea that for a man to search for a woman is to, you know, get married to her, to form a relationship. And so God laments that with rejected Israel, no one's searching for her, but I am. And yet in all the centuries and the millennia of, you know, tragic history of Israel, it could seem that God was sleeping, waiting for this repentance or whatever that's supposed to happen. But actually he was and is searching, knocking on the door of every individual Jewish person, and it seems to me of all people. Going further, Job says something, well, he says a lot of wonderful things, but something very wonderful in Job 10:16. He says, "He hunts me," talking about God, "he hunts me like a lion, and then he is wonderful to me. He shows his wonderful grace to me." So this is God in search of man. This, he hunts me like a lion. He seems aggressive. And then he finds me and shows himself wonderful to me. So that's what God was doing to Job. Through all the, you know, stuff that he went through. Betrayal by his friends, maybe his wife, loss of his kids, collapse of his health, loss of all things. This was God hunting him like a lion because he wanted him. And he was a just and upright man. He was a good Christadelphian or whatever. He was perfect and all that. Yeah, that's what it says at the start, that this man was perfect. This man was upright, and he was. But he still had to be hunted beyond that. David, Psalm 89, 20, "I have found David, my servant. I have found him." And God found him a man after his own heart. He searched all through Israel looking for someone who could replace Saul, and I found him. But there's no indication of that search. And there isn't today. The skies seem steel, don't they? God appears not to be. But beyond the steely silence of the skies, there is this search of God for people that we have to, well, once your eyes are open to it, then you see it. Then you see it. And of course, one thing that this makes a huge difference to is your attitude to talking to folks about the gospel. Because the impression is that nobody is interested. But in fact, that is a hole in the heart of every human being that only Jesus can fill. This is absolutely certain. And God is searching for people. And all we're trying to do is connect them. And there are people searching for him. They're not interested in going to church, going to religion, all that stuff. That I will accept. But there's not so many people when I come to church. I accept that. But there are plenty of people out there who are searching for him. And he is searching for them. And that is why when Jesus says, go into all the world, preach the gospel, etc., he says, and I am with you to the end of the age. I am with you. And he will be particularly with us when we in our little way do our bit of evangelism. When we in our little way get the courage to change the track of that conversation and suggest something about Jesus to a person. You feel his very special presence. Because this is really what he wants to do. Isn't it, David? This is really what he wants to do. And you go out to people and say, do you want New Testament? Or have you thought about Jesus or whatever? People are interested, aren't they, David? You gave a New Testament to a lady with a... To a what lady?
What?
You got 10 points in the little game for giving a New Testament to a lady with a...
Hijab.
Yeah, so they get 1 point for each New Testament they distribute, and 10 points if you get a woman with a hijab to take on. And he got 21. He got 21. That was in Croydon, not in Bournemouth, by the way. What I'm saying is that, beneath the hijab, beneath all that stuff, beneath the macho sort of, oh no mate, I'm not interested, I don't do religion, yeah, I say, yeah, I don't either mate, beneath all that, there are hearts that are searching for God, and God is in search of man. Now, this carries on, this theme of God in search for Israel, and I want to delve into it a little bit closer, because were Israel looking for God? It seems to me, no, they weren't. He says, Hosea 9, verse 10, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first ripe in the fig tree, but they turned away. That's Hosea 9:10. I found Israel. God was searching for Israel, and he found them like grapes in the wilderness. He thought they were wonderful. So God was searching for Israel, and he thinks he's found them in the wilderness. Jeremiah 2, Ezekiel 16, God says he fell in love with Israel in the wilderness. But, oh, you were wonderful. But were they? Were they searching for God? No. They were a bunch of people in Egypt who wanted a way out of a desperate situation. And so they said yes to whatever was going. But Ezekiel 20, they took the idols of Egypt with them through the Red Sea. Amos, they carried the tabernacle of Molech through the wilderness. They carried two tabernacles through the wilderness. Don't think of this faithful Israel carrying the tabernacle of Yahweh on their shoulders, and that was it. Yeah, they were doing that. And they were carrying, Amos says, and Stephen quotes it in Acts, they were carrying the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of their god Remphan all through the wilderness. Now, are these people searching for God? I wouldn't say so. But he searched for them and rejoices that he finds them. Numbers 23, the thing with Balaam, God says through him, how beautiful are your tents of Israel and your tabernacles of Jacob. I saw you as the cedar trees by the waters, as the line aloes planted by the rivers. He did not behold iniquity in Jacob, nor did he see perverseness in Israel. There was iniquity in Jacob, there was bags of it, but God did not see that because he was in love with them. When Paul talks about imputing righteousness, that is true. But God does that, and he did that to Israel. Why? Because he loved them. Now, love is not blind, contrary to what is said. It might seem like that to us. You take the girl who's about to marry the druggie and the alcoholic, and we say, look, do you not see what's going to happen, my dear? And she's not blind, it might seem like that to us. She's not blind. She sees it all. She sees it all. But she sees it in a different way. And she, if you like, to use theological kind of language, she imputes righteousness to the guy. And that is actually part of what love is. To count the other person as wonderful and righteous and whatever wonderful when they're not. That is actually part of love. Yeah? People fall asleep in Christ and the family left behind. Oh, you know, Mum was wonderful. She was wonderful. Oh, other people would be thinking, yeah, she was a difficult old lady. But, but everybody, understandably, because they loved Mum, not my own Mum for that matter, you know, because we all loved my Mum, whatever, she was wonderful to us. Yeah, sure, she was wonderful. Doesn't mean we were blind to her, does it, David?
Yeah.
Well, you were. And so this is love. This is love. And this is the love that God shows in his search for people. And he says, I found Israel. Oh, they were wonderful. It was like finding grapes in the wilderness to God. Like they're in a totally windswept, barren sort of place. Oh, there's lovely grapes. Well, that's how God liked to see Israel. And it's how he sees us. Now, if you've got Hosea open, Hosea 12 verse 4 goes a little bit more deep on this. It talks about Jacob. He struggled, this is verse 4, Hosea 12, 4. He struggled with the angel and prevailed. He wept. He made supplication to him. He, that is God, found him, that is Jacob, at Bethel. And there he spoke with us. God found Jacob at Bethel. Well, that is talking about the night when he's run away from home, having lied to his blind old dad and deceived his father. And he comes to Bethel, what was later called Bethel, and he dreams of the stairway to heaven. And God says, I'll be your God. And Jacob says, yeah, well, if you bring me back here in peace and safety, I will give you 10% of all I've got, which I always think is incredibly mean. If you do all that for me, I'll give you 10%. Jacob wasn't with God at the time. He really wasn't. When he talks about God, he talks about the God of my father Isaac, the God of my father Abraham. Never, only at the end of his life does he talk about my God and the God of Israel. So, the thing is, God was in search of him and he found him, he says, at Bethel. All these are examples of God searching for people who weren't searching for him. I mean, Saul, king of Israel, is the great example. The guy's out there looking for lost cattle. And suddenly, Samuel sort of says to him, well, you're going to be king of Israel, like me. Yeah, all right. And it's like Simon of Cyrene carrying the cross. He is coming out of the countryside, a simple man, simple in the sense that he didn't understand what's going on. Hey, you, carry the cross. This is God all the time in search. Now, if we can perceive the scale of this that's going on, that just as God knows every molecule at the bottom of the ocean and all the little insect life that's going on underneath a tree, he knows every single heart on the planet. And the magnitude of his work with people is huge. All the little nudges, all the little pushes to try to get someone to him. When you and I walk up to them and say, excuse me, would you like a New Testament? Well, that's definitely a significant part in his program, if you like, with all these people. So God is really at work. The scale and intensity of his work with people is beyond description, is beyond words. This is so. And so try and get the courage to get involved with people. I don't mean inviting people necessarily to church, but in spiritual conversation. Because, as I say, beneath the bravado of, I'm not into all that, you know, they are. Everyone is actually not only interested, but desperately interested. Absolutely. We met people yesterday on the beach like that. You could smell the drugs coming off these four or five fellas. You know, you could really smell it way off. And I did engage them. And it turned out, chatting with one of these guys, and they were sort of half high as a kite, but this bloke trying to prove to me that, look here, I'm really interested. He pulled his phone out, his smartphone, and showed me one of those Bible apps. that the guy's downloaded the Bible on his phone. Well, you know, at first blush, you would not think these guys are even worth talking to. But it's there. People downloading a Bible app when they are into, you know, drugs and various misbehaviors, I guess. There's that hole in the heart of people. There really is, that only Jesus can fill. So, does this just mean that we have to sit back and let it all happen? Well, yes and no. In the end, God will not force people to be in his kingdom who don't want to be there. I mean, that would be sort of a bit unkind to make a guy sort of, you know, be good forever sort of thing when he doesn't want to be good sort of thing. And it would be, you know, not his scene. So there has to be a desire. And every one of us here has that desire to be saved. That's why we're here. And if that is our desire, then all that love is appealing will be saved. Paul says that. And so God is not playing hard to get. God is not leaving us with the Bible as a riddle to be solved and facing off against man over this Bible as a riddle that you must sort of conclusively interpret, and then he's kind of there for you. He desperately wants us to be saved. He wants the project to work out. He doesn't want the whole thing that involved the death of his son, the whole expenditure of his heart and soul, to just fail. He wants us to be saved. And this is the good news, that we shall be saved. So God found Jacob at Bethel, but it says that in the context of saying that Jacob wrestled with the angel, which of course was sometime after that. Well, why introduce that particular idea? And I think it's because it says that night that Jacob found grace. It says that he found grace in the eyes of Esau, his brother, and he found grace in God's eyes. So God found him all the way back there in Bethel, and then years later, he finds God's grace when he's wrestling with the angel, and they end up wrestling and eventually hugging each other. That's how I see the wrestling incident finishing. God and man hugging each other. That's how it finished. Inseparable from each other. And so there is, however, an element to which all of us do search for God. Like I say, the bloke hires a kite down on the beach yesterday with his Bible app on his smartphone. Yeah, there is that element. And in Proverbs, it starts off with Solomon saying, "Lift up your voice for understanding. Cry out aloud for wisdom." And then you come to the woman wisdom. And she says that she is crying out to people, and she's lifting up her voice to people as they walk along the path. So woman wisdom, in the metaphor, if you like, is crying out to people, is begging people, "Listen to me." And people are crying out and lifting up their voice, wanting wisdom and understanding. And so the two meet. And of course, when there is this meeting, the people searching for God encounter the God who is searching for them, then there is this electric moment of which the parables in Luke 15 speak. The lost coin, the lost sheep, the lost son. That when the woman finds the coin, or the shepherd finds the sheep, there is this party. And of course, you understand it. God has been searching, searching, searching every heart all over the planet, wanting this one, that one, doesn't work out. She loses interest. He drops off the edge. She gets involved in religion too much. He, whatever, goes wrong. Oh, it fails all the time. But then one person makes it and keeps on, yes, and says yes to God. Wow. And so there is this magic moment when, if you like, heaven and earth meet. And there is this party in heaven. That's the whole point of those three parables. And yet the first two of them, the lost sheep and the lost coin, they're objects, if you like, that were not searching. The coin wasn't searching. It didn't sprout legs and start searching for its owner. The sheep didn't start searching for the shepherd. It shows God's initiative in all this. And in fact, the prodigal son, the same. You could say, yeah, well, he returned, but not really, because he just wants to get somewhere with his food. He says, well, I won't ever be my father's son again. I'll just go back and see if I could become his servant. At least I get some food instead of dying with hunger. But the father is out there, as we know, all the time, looking for him to come home. So the initiative is with God. We love, in 1 John, because he first loved us. It is not we who take the initiative. We love God this way. We love God because he first loved us. The first move was always with him. And this is the problem with any idea that by our sort of unaided intellectual search for God, we are rewarded with finding him. This is half true, but it is dangerously untrue in the other half, because God is searching for us, and all you got to do in that sense is say yes and be led by him further. So then, back there in Luke 15, the woman who loses her coin. I mean, women in those days owned nothing. They didn't even own their own bodies. They belonged to the husband. But the one thing they did own were these 10 coins that they had, that they were given as a dowry or whatever when they got married, that were around their forehead. If you lost one of them, you lost something totally intimate and personal to yourself. And words cannot describe how you felt when you had lost it, and you were going to search for it till you found it. This is the meaning of us to God, that we are that meaningful to him, and not only you and me, but actually all the people that he's searching for. So in what sense then, and how are we found? Well, we're found, the guy can be at a bus stop repenting of some sin he committed, 10 years ago or something. Yeah, sure. And then God finds him. It can be in baptism. It's ongoing through your life. But on a sort of global scale, on a bigger scale, I think we were all found when Jesus died on the cross, which is what we're here to remember. Why I say that is on the basis of the parable of the lost sheep. Because the sheep is lost, and the shepherd, who is clearly Jesus, goes to find it and puts it on his shoulders. Now, if you imagine, I'm not an actor, but if you can imagine a shepherd. Well, Cindy, you're the actress around here. Can you come and act? This isn't scripted, by the way. Can you come and act a shepherdess, caravan a shepherd, carrying a sheep on his shoulders? Right, okay. Who else walked like this? The cross. Thank you, Chris. So, it was exactly the same picture. Thank you, darling. And so the shepherd, the sheep that's lost, is the cross. He carried our sins, so forth. Exactly the same visual image. And, of course, when he gets home, he invites everyone to rejoice with him, that I have found that which is lost, and so there shall be joy amongst the angels of heaven, and so on. And that joy was surely there in heaven when Jesus did it, and we were found. So, we're here to celebrate. We are here to join in the rejoicing. But there's an element of unreality in all the parables. They on the surface, at first blush, appear to be normal little stories, but they've all got this bit in them that is unreal. Okay, let's take the lost sheep. A shepherd who loses 1%. Well, 1% lost cattle is actually quite good. Don't worry about it. But this one goes out looking for this sheep and leaves the 99. And when he comes back, he brings the sheep not to the sheepfold, but into his house. He carries it on his shoulder, with the sheep kicking and screaming all the way. mean, these children's, children's Bibles, pictures of happy sheepy, you know, with a smiley face, bobbing along on Shepherd's shoulder. I mean, he was doing poos all down his back. It's what I tell my kids. I say, yeah, you realize that's not right. You know what the sheep was doing on his back? And certainly sheep don't like to be carried. Well, I'm not a farmer, but I guess they don't like to be carried on humans' shoulders. And of course, this is us, is it not? And anyway, when he gets it back, he doesn't take it back to the sheepfold. There's an element of unreality. He brings it into his house. Then another weird bit, he invites his neighbours to come round to his house to look at his sheep in his house. That's very weird. But of course, the idea is that, yes, this is the unusual saviour that we are here to remember. And this is the value and the meaning of persons. So we're here to join in the celebration. The sheep joins in the celebration. That's the idea. And you think, well, what does the sheep understand? Well, what do we understand, actually? With God, Jesus, and the angels looking down here on us, well, that's what it must seem. What do they understand? Yeah, a little bit. But we do. And we say, Father, Jesus, thank you. We do struggle in our little sheep-like way to appreciate what you have done, that you have searched for me, that you have found me. And this is the most wonderful truth, as I say, that God is in search of man. A man is not alone. You are not alone. I'm not alone. Israel is not alone. But beyond the steely silence of the skies, beyond what appears, there is this huge level of activity by God for his people. And in our evangelism, we take a part in that, we're just part of that bigger picture. And in our celebration now, in the bread and wine, of what he has done, we are, as I say, part of that celebration. That he has found us, that I have been found, that I am not alone, no matter what, no matter what we go through. You know, underground, you're not kids, right? We're all mature people. We have all seen this, have we not? That he is there. That he is not only there, but that he has this special love for me. For years, maybe for a couple of decades, I had this idea, I don't know why, but God seems to love me especially, sort of almost more than other people. I couldn't quite verbalize it in those terms, that I thought God sort of loved me more than other people, but I just had this feeling. I just had this feeling. I don't know, the penny dropped. But that's how we all feel. That he does. He's got a special love for me and for you. That I am special. What does the word saint mean, Daniel?
I skip that.
Special.
Special one. So a saint is a special one. You know, the New Testament keeps talking about saints. I always tell the kids, special ones. We're special. And this is the thing. It doesn't mean that you walk down the street with your head up, you know, up yourself and arrogant, not at all. But that I am special. That I am loved. I am loved by the King of the Cosmos. By Jesus, and not just love in an abstract sense, but love that had moment to it, in that he died for me. Yeah, it's one thing to say, oh, I love you, hon, you know, but love is action. There's got to be more to it than words, and God knows that. And when we ask the question, well, why did Jesus have to die on the cross? Why are we here remembering his death? I know the cross was kind of multifactorial, but I think one of the reasons was to grab our attention. That I do really love you. I have told you this all through the Old Testament. You kind of didn't believe it. I will give you my son. Will that get your attention? Will that persuade you? Will that make you feel special? Will that make you get it? That I'm passionate to save you? And sadly it doesn't for a lot of people, but it has done for us. Because we have perceived it and we have said yes. And in the end, that is finally all we have to keep on doing. Thank you.